Your sound of the Winelands, KC 107.7.
It's Frank Dialogue on your radio with me on Kopotse JJ Tabani, and we are with Tumelo Mototwane tonight, bringing you special conversations about the G20, the B20, the C20. What's all about the 20s? Tumelo, good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Sekolo Saga Tabani. But you know what? This song is so befitting because I was just thinking that the G20 is representing this cry, this song. For those in our communities, they feel they're not as represented or included, are hoping that this would be a cry to our leaders to remember that whatever decisions, conversations are to impact their lives.
They must impact them, because actually a lot of people have no clue what the fuss is all about.
Coming here, we
could have taken 10 minutes, we took an hour because the roads are closed. There's a lot of movement. Tomorrow is the leaders summit that's taking place in South Africa, and tonight, as we did on Wednesday, we're breaking it down to say, what does it mean for you? We're coming live from a number of stations too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Excited to be welcoming our listeners from Alex FM, Teta FM, Kofifi FM, Izulu Mzansi, Radio Zbonele, Alfred Nzo FM, Ikora FM, Radio Kwezi, Radio KC, Voice of the Cape. We're all excited to be engaging with you. But speaking of engagement, we need you to call in. So make sure that you top up ka half tiger, you top up with your air time. We need to speak to you, please. So please dial the line 011-440-1396. We have a great lineup tonight.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking to Ambassador Kingsley Makubele. He is an expert in international relations. He's been an ambassador in various countries and will be able to break it down for us and also make us understand what on earth is going on. And a little later on, we'll be talking to former Deputy President Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka, who has been very involved with the C20, where civil society gathered, and she says she's very, very happy with the outcomes of what has happened. Of course, today, Tumelo, there was a shutdown.
Yeah, a national shutdown gender-based violence and femicide. You would know if you perhaps have noticed the purple profile picture. People have been encouraged to download it, but to go the extra mile, to actually participate in a national shutdown today, to make sure that at a certain time, I think it's 12 o'clock,
12 o'clock
today.
Yeah, but when you said you saw nobody lying on the floor at 12.
I mean, I was at a wimpy.
Yeah.
And nobody there,
and nobody was lying
was
down.
Lying down. Yeah. So I hope,
but at least we are wearing black. So that's fine. So we'll be talking to the Minister of Women and Youth and People with Disability in the Presidency, Minister Chukunga, a little later. So a jam-packed show coming to you, courtesy of Telkom, who are connecting all of us tonight from Alexander to Cape Town. I think we can go straight now and talk to our guest, Ambassador Makubele. Good evening, Ambassador.
Good evening, JJ. How are you, brother?
I'm all right. It's been a while. Are you all right?
I'm good.
No, wonderful, man. You know, we thought who best to tell us what on earth does this all mean for us? You heard what stations were on now, 10 stations across the country, people in ordinary communities, right? Who half the time actually have no clue what are talking about. How do you break it down? How important is this for South Africa, for communities, for you and I, that we've got this kind of a gathering of world leaders on our doorstep tonight?
You know, the G20, JJ, it's a gathering of elites. But these are elites with benefits to the poor. Because decision they make there, they affect us. Good decision they make there, they enhance the credibility, for instance, of the Republic would come out of that. Now, the credibility of the Republic has to do with a host of related issues, which would include the potential for future investments, which would include companies deciding to move and establish their presence in this country and then creating jobs in the process. So that's where it's important. That's why I'm saying it's a gathering of elites with benefits to the poor. Because eventually, whatever they need to do, the rich, they're going to need us, ordinary people, to add value in what they want to do here but they benefit in the process and we benefit in the process. So it's a win-win situation for ordinary people.
Dr. Makubele Tumelo Mototwane speaking here. Very good evening to you. A pleasure speaking to you. And it sounds like, at least from the recent warnings that you are sending out to South Africa and its diplomats, its government officials, you're warning for them to stick to diplomacy. You're saying they should not be swayed. They should have a backbone and not be made a pawn in this engagement.
Tumelo, it's so lovely to talk to you. I was surprised, when did you disappear to all of a sudden? Now I know where you are.
I mean, Alex.
you know, people forget that diplomacy is a statecraft. Mm-hmm. It's a tool that you use to fight your battles. No one is going to fight your battle. In the international politics, you know, the realists, they think that the government is a central actor in the anarchic world, and therefore there's no superior authority than the sovereign state. Mm-hmm. Now, if the sovereign state is the ultimate authority, if you don't exercise your diplomacy in engaging with other world, you're going to lose out. Mm-hmm. But I've just discovered a tendency that our politicians have the propensity to really go down terribly. Mm. To stoop so low instead of rising above, particularly during this times when the focus is on South Africa. Mm-hmm. And show how smart we as South Africans are in terms of advancing our diplomatic agenda and international agenda. Mm-hmm. Focus on issues, not be dragged to deal with peripheral issues. That's where I think we're losing it. And I've really been trying to speak to our people to realize that a diplomatic battle is not a one-day event. It's a long process.
Yep.
If you don't stick for the long haul, you're going to drop out. And that's what people want to do. They want to exhaust you diplomatically so that they can show that you failed. They invited you along the way, mm-hmm. and you collapsed along the way. And that's what they intend to do if you don't focus on issues. And what are the issues? Mm-hmm. We have a good opportunity this time around to showcase that there's no genocide going on in this country.
Right. Mm.
I mean, I watched footage today of this gender-based violence activists. Mm. They resemble the true rainbow nation.
Right.
It includes all races. So this is what the world has to see.
Mm.
You know, during the World Cup, Tumelo and JJ, you will recall this time around, we were watching grannies playing football. We were watching unveiling of new things.
Okay.
Now, what we are watching our TV screen are commissions after commissions.
Sure.
As if it's a country that is in total disarray. Mm. If I was an investor, I'm coming for the first time in South Africa, and I realized all the three major TV stations throughout the day, they are focused on what is going on, the commission, the robbery, the killings.
Sure.
In the evening is a replay of the same.
Sure.
When do we showcase the best that we have
the
as a nation?
Well, that's
how this is how people are going to perceive us as they live here. There are things that we are not showcasing.
Mm.
And that's a failure of our diplomatic effort to understand how to utilize the diplomatic statecraft, in my own view.
Absolutely. I want to link it to that whole statecraft issue. The U.S. absent from the G20, right? What are the implications of that? And how do you think we have handled that scenario at the moment?
You know, JJ, I speculated a few weeks ago that the United States will be here because the United States understands state power and understands how to use power.
Mm.
They understand that if they boycott an event, the event will go ahead without them, and decisions will be made that are actually contrary to them.
Mm.
They realize that they will be totally isolated. Then my view is that they will send a junior person to come and play a veto person.
Mm.
And I don't think, as a country, we prepared for this eventuality, that they may send a junior person to come and participate. That's why you're hearing the president saying that we are not going to allow a handover to a junior person.
Yeah. Mm.
States are represented. No one determines who represents the state.
Mm.
The states are sovereign by their own nature, and they determine who represents them. Now, what should happen, in my own view, South Africa to downgrade the courtesy they extend to anyone who's not at the level of heads of state. Mm. Even the handover, South Africa can decide that we'll read whatever we need to read as a procedural handover in a room that has no media, has no one. Mm. It only has our photograph to record the event. And that's it. And not get into this thing of saying that you can't accept that. Mm. What are the alternatives? If you don't do that, you're not accepting the participation of a country to do what it's supposed to do. And that's a sovereign state. Mm. So that's where the one big problem is in terms of how we are handling this thing.
Yeah.
But the other thing, JJ, you may have had Minister Lamola the other day speaking about the white supremacists as the United States and Donald Trump. Mm. I think that's the language that as a top diplomat you don't use. You really nuance the manner in which you communicate. You avoid to describe people. You define issues and you debate around issues. You unpack issues. Mm. If the identity is such, you don't pronounce that. It's pronounced by its own explanation. Mm. So we're not focusing on that. We're focusing on playing the person and not playing the game. Instead of playing the game.
Right.
You know, we used to have a say that you throw the hat in the air and the owner would take it. Mm. So that's what they should be doing. Now, they are getting involved in entangling in this mudsling fight with the U.S. Mm. The U.S., of course, is a very big power. The power asymmetry is so much in favor of the U.S.
Yes. Mm.
They have the network to discredit you. They have everything to discredit you around the world. So why do you go and play like that?
Yeah.
Instead of understanding that the fight you want to pick, you pick the fight on your own terrain at your own time. Mm. And you would win, and you rely on your political and moral superiority in engaging this issue.
If I could just Dr. Makubele, I mean, we're talking here about a ping pong between the U.S. and South Africa, but you know that on the other hand, Solidarity has had posters and banners across Johannesburg, across Gauteng. I know that there have been efforts to remove some of them that paint a picture of a racially biased South Africa, almost, if not completely, buying into the narrative of, you know, the sort of reversal apartheid that's allegedly happening here in South Africa, according to U.S. media, according to U.S., you know, diplomats or even politicians and government officials. So what do you make of, on one hand, the government, the South African government, is trying to almost address these allegations against South Africa, but then you have an organization once again making all these posters almost to send a message to all the leaders coming to South Africa that indeed Trump is right about South Africa?
You know, people like you, Tumelo and JJ, who understand the importance of the media. South Africa, you should have maybe advised, maybe you did, I don't know, advised South Africa that during the visit of this high-level delegations, take media houses, have media tours to different areas. Mm. Take them to Orania. Mm. Hire a plane, take them, fly into Orania. Let them go and speak to those people who live in Orania. Take them now, if you go now this evening to Vilakazi Street, you're going to find white people who are having access there. But in Orania this time, you don't find anyone. Mm. But take them to all segregated areas where the poor, it's so clear. Take them to Alex and take them to the posh suburbs of Sandton City to see how people live. Mm. And then let them make a value judgment about who is actually a victim in this case.
Sure.
That apartheid and that poverty in this country has a color, and that color of poverty is black. So they should be the one who pronounces. I don't think we did those kind of media tours that government is funding to showcase exactly what's going on. Also showcase where there's a level of integration, however small it may be. And then at the end of the day, those journalists should pronounce that there's no genocide. Instead, I see CNN is doing a documentary around Mozambique and the ICC Mozambique. Trying to scare people who are coming here to say, well, this is what ISIS is here. And then to move from Mozambique to South Africa, this is the case. They are running a special documentary around those issues.
Crazy. Well,
why couldn't we strategically communicate what we are all about in South Africa? And showcase our shortcomings. What is that we're trying to do? So that in the process, people can join hands with us to say what South Africa is doing, we must hold hands with them, because when they fail, it's going to be catastrophic for the country. I don't think we've done that. I haven't seen any.
Doctor, before we let you go, two or three things you think would, in a sense, signal something impactful that should come out of the heads of state meeting. So heads of leaders of these delegations that are gathering in Johannesburg. What should be the outcome, the three outcomes you think this will now, in a sense, be a legacy of the G20 in South Africa?
You know, one thing that we took from Brazil is a social summit. The Brazilians are the first to host the social summit. Now, the social summit have developed their own document, and that document ought to feed into the leaders' final document. Even if they reject it, which they are likely to reject, but it will form a legacy in terms of the civil society making a meaningful contribution about how they see things. So the civil society will continue to use that as a platform to lobby governments moving forward, governments that are reluctant, that are dragging their feet in terms of implementing issues they identify there. It's how they're going to be used moving forward. The government platform is not the only one. There are other alternative platforms that they have, including elected officials, including getting people elected on the basis of fulfilling some of those issues. We need to also, one thing that we regard as a success here, if we are able to get JJ the funding for the energy for the clean energy transition, it's shown that China has done it. It can be done. It has been shown. So if we can get funding for that, but the biggest thing that should come out of this thing and send a clear message is the political will to deal with global debt. Global debt, as we're sitting, is $333 trillion. Global debt.
Sure.
Out of that $333 trillion, $120 trillion is public sector debt, what we owe as government. So the rest is what individuals owe, our mortgage, what banks owe, and so on. So it's so huge. And the global economy is $120 trillion. That's the growth of the global economy. And in the last 3 years, the global economy has grown by about $22 trillion. The debt has grown by $33 trillion in the last 3 years. So it shows that we are going to bequeath to future generation a huge, huge debt. So if anything can come out of this thing that addresses the global debt, and in some cases, how to look at restructuring the debt of poor countries and highly indebted countries, because they are trapped, they can't get out of it. If they keep on perpetually borrowing. Our debt is good because it's a domestic debt, but countries that are dependent on foreign countries, structural adjustments start kicking in for them. So that's one critical issue, that there must be a political commitment to deal with the global debt and to deal with economic growth. We are, I think amongst the, not I think, definitely amongst the G20, our unemployment stands at 33%. I think next in line is 7%. So it tells you that we really need job generation here. And I hope what will come out of this will come out clear strategies and frameworks that would help us to develop job generation, a growing economy.
Tama Kubele, thank you very much for enlightening us tonight. We really appreciate your time, and we hope to talk again soon.
It's my pleasure, JJ, and it's my pleasure to me.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Thank you, bye-bye.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night. What a wonderful insight. Eh?
Yeah, I think so, especially coming from someone with deep, thorough diplomacy insights. He's not wavering when it comes to the stance of South Africa.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And also very important that we should try and showcase what our country has to offer. Because we've got all these visitors, these are investors, these are potential investors for the future.
Right.
Right, and that must leave South Africa saying, wow, these guys could do it. Right? Before it comes to the agenda of the G20, it's not just the aesthetics of arriving here, having order, having hospitality, having all the things that you... You know, when we hosted the World Summit, people arrived there and they thought they were going to see lions running around.
That's true.
And, it just and I'm not joking. They thought they were shocked to see the type of hotels we have here, five-star things, you name it, you know, hospitality, etc. Yeah. And I think he's right to say we should have done more to showcase. After the break, we talked to the former Deputy President Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka, who has been very involved with the C20. And of course, Dr. Makubele mentioned the issue about that being one of the things that stand out about this summit, that you had civil society also having their voices heard. So we hope that she'll be able to talk to us about that. Of course, in the context also of the march, the shutdown that we had, she was head of UN Women for 10 years. I'm sure she'll have something to tell us also about that. Stay tuned to Frank Dialogue on your radio. Let's take a break. After the break, Dr. Phumzile, our guest here tonight.
Frank Dialogue on your radio with Dr. JJ Tabane. Let's talk frankly.
Nationwide, Tim Bizo here to try to understand what on earth is all this G20 buzz all about. And joining us and making us understand is former UN Women Head Dr. Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka, always willing to talk to us. Dr. Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka, hello, good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining us tonight in this special broadcast. Just to understand what's going on with the G20, I know you're very involved with the C20. Maybe you can kick us off with that. And this also happening on the eve of this national shutdown, highlighting issues of gender-based violence. Maybe you can also weigh in on that. Good evening to you.
Good evening, listeners.
C20, what does it mean? A lot of people... very excited. In fact, we just spoke now to Dr. Kingsley Makubele, who says one of the things that stand out about this G20 is the fact that civil society gathered and will be putting their own views of what should happen, you know, to the leaders who are gathering tomorrow.
Yes, G20 social is a gathering of civil society, and we actually had the bumper attendance, 4,500 around that who attended the G20 social. As you know, civil society is very vibrant, very vocal about the issues they are concerned about, and they were all centered around the of the G20, solidarity, sustainability, and equality. Issues of climate change were very high on the agenda of the civil society, and issues of equality were discussed a lot. In fact, also inequality, probably more than equality, because, as you know, this is the issue that occupies us a lot. But also, JJ, something that for me was very outstanding in that gathering was just how many young people were there. Because in the G20, you have all these engagement groups that are outside government that participate. It's those that are structured, that have already been contributing to the process of the G20, but also those who are not a member of anything, who are in normal circumstances would not have an opportunity to weigh in. So, for instance, when you had a breakaway group in the G20, you had like 600 people in a room, which you can understand takes up a lot of space. So a group on digital inclusion, on equitable transformation. We had a group that was looking at trade resilience and inclusive value chain. We had a group that was looking, as I've said, on climate justice and just transition and energy. And we also had a group that was looking at sustainable finance and international financial architecture. And these are the issues that we discussed in the other groups. But when they are being discussed just by civil society, it brings in the people's views on the importance of these issues.
Right. Mampumzile, good evening. It's Dumelo Mototwane. And it sounds like, you know, there was a plethora of themes and topics that were discussed in various rooms. So I can almost imagine just a hive of engagement in various rooms taking place in real time to address some of the, you know, perhaps injustices and inequalities that we still face in our land. But what were some of the outcomes for someone sitting in, you know, Alexandra, in Soweto, in Tembisa, in Lewakhumo, wondering how does that translate to a solution to my problem as you know, an ordinary South African? What were the outcomes in terms of actionable, measurable impact?
So we are also very concerned about that, because all these issues that I've just highlighted require other stakeholders other than civil society for real solutions to be identified and to be implemented. We then layered legacy projects so that you could have concrete a concrete follow-up on things that matter on the lives of civil society. So the implementation on financial inclusion. We looked at how much SMEs of young people, of women, are underfunded and in many cases not funded at all. So we came up with real resolution and pledges of the support that can be given across Africa to those businesses. One of the most impressive ones was the financing of small business across the continent by Equity Bank, which then intends to mobilize other banks on the continent, banks that have their footprints in different parts of Africa, to look into the number of SMEs and micro enterprises that they could finance between now and 2030, for instance. We had the issue of access to higher education, because we have so many young people that do not make it to university because there isn't enough space in university. So even if they qualify to be at university, they end up staying at home. And we considered that online courses that are offered by universities that are properly accredited and the courses are of high quality, these could reach a number of young people across the continent. So we had universities then pledging to extend their online teaching, as well as looking at how we could also prepare those who teach at university for online teaching, because it's not as easy to transition from teaching in the classroom to online teaching. There's some preparation that the lecturers need. And plus, if you're a poor student, you still need a scholarship. So we also looked at who will finance these students. So we put in some steps that would include the preparation of teachers, the offers by universities, and the financing of students. And what we have now, and we intend to expand, would then give us the probably thousands, and I'm hoping even millions, of students that would have higher education that would otherwise not have it. When you look at also learners who are at home, who are out of school, out of training, who need support. And one of the important interventions that we considered was sports, where in those communities, people are poor, and there's no infrastructure, there's no coaching, but also a student and a young person is not a one-dimensional being. You just don't need sports. You need to layer it with other interventions. And it has been done before, and DBSA was offering us a lot of their own experiences, and they took leadership in helping us to address that. We brought in the IOC, International Olympics Committee, the African Olympics Committee, mm-hmm. and then the DBSA, the infrastructure banks in other parts of Africa that could facilitate. And I hope you are getting the drift.
Oh, yeah.
That what we're doing here was looking at things we can do for ourselves as Africa. My attitude was that we should not just look at G20 as a place where we can attract aid, as we have always known it, into what we want to solve in Africa, but a place for us where we could gather so that we can exchange ideas to address the issues on our continent that we can address and solve ourselves using our own resources.
You are on Frank Dialogue on your radio. Let's take a call quickly before we let you go, Mama. Caller, good evening.
Good evening, JJ. Good evening, Tumelo and Mamsin Zilambo. My name is Mbali, and I am calling you from Durban. The question that I'd like to ask is that we saw what civil society can achieve today through the march and how it was non-confrontational, and a lot of women and men participated. They were black, they weren't dying, they really withdrew from the economy today in one way or another. When civil society can do that in a non-confrontational manner, what are the plans to try and rope in communities to such events? Because I feel there wasn't enough information about this that was shared. So in future, are there any plans that maybe came out of the civil society movement that will bring us in and bring us along as just people on the streets who want to make a change and contribute? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mbali. Mama, your response to that?
So obviously,
we can hear you, Mama. Continue.
So obviously we did not have all the people that deserve to be there. But I think to have 4,500 people in attendance who really came from grassroots was quite an achievement. People came by bus in many cases, and in many cases, people coming from provinces as the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, were people that we backed. So I think that there will never be an opportunity to bring everybody, and also we probably would not be in a position to have the space to really congregate in numbers that would be required. But I think probably in future, in the preparatory stages, we could do more in the provinces themselves, so that even if people don't come to the final event, which is the summit itself, they would have been part of the steps leading to the summit. And it's obviously one time for us to host this event here in South Africa. Next year, the United States is hosting. I mean, we are not expecting that the U.S. will want to have a social summit in its own G20, but there are other countries beyond the U.S. that will host summits, and we'll stay in touch with those countries, because this was the second social summit. The first one was in Brazil, because it was started by President Lula, and our president then said that he would like something similar for South Africa. So, I mean, I take your point, but it's obviously a work in progress, if you like.
Mampumzile, as we say goodbye to you, briefly, please, if you may, give us your departing words as we still grieve GBVF. I don't think it's going to be a one-day incident, one-day march, one-day call. Every single day, you know, in South Africa, we are grieving about the lives of women. Your message regarding the scourge?
Yeah. So, you know, firstly, hats off for the organizers of the shutdown, because I really think that it was very impactful. Just the silence in itself said a lot. The silence was louder than the music, you know, we normally bring to these events. But the fact that now it has been categorized as national disaster, I think we should all study what does this mean in regulations and laws. What then are we entitled to as a result of this stagnation? If you remember, when we had the national disaster during COVID, there was so much that we did not always know was possible to do, which then we're able to do about COVID, because it had been categorized as a national disaster. And we should be stringent about looking for those actions and resources and mobilization to be there. Because if I quit the health pandemic as COVID was, and the GBV, in both cases, people die. And you need the mobilization to be as intense as it was in the other disaster, so that we can see change.
Thank you so much, Ma. I'm sorry to interject there. We seem to have a caller that's been on the line, and I'm sure they're hoping to get a question or a comment in. Hi, caller. Good evening. All right, we seem to have lost them there. My apologies for that. But of course, if you would like to call, we still want to hear from you. 011-440-1936. You are still finishing your point, Mama, before we say goodbye?
I was just saying that we now should really use this definition that we have now in the best way possible, and make sure that the resource allocation, but also the posture at local government level, at provincial level, at national level, as well as in communities, is very much aligned with the definition of what a national disaster is.
Thank you. Thank you, Mama. Thank you for your time tonight. And thank you for always being available to talk to us. We really appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Former
Bye.
Deputy President.
President we never had.
Yeah.
Yeah. President we never had.
Only women deputy president?
The only woman president. But this woman president we never had.
Mm.
You know, so such dignity and so on. And by the way, after we didn't elect her, to be that, the UN snatched her.
Yeah.
Snatched her to be the head of UN Women.
For 10 years, he said.
By the way, South Africa did not support that appointment.
Mm.
You know what happened?
Mm-mm.
She was reappointed to that position. So she held it for 5 years and then reappointed. Oof. Was there for 10 years.
Mm.
You know, sometimes we don't see our own talent.
Oof.
And we mess around. And then the world says, no, we're going to appoint that person to be the leader of the world in issues of women. So really, for her to be so accessible to just talk to us, talk to our 10 community stations that are connecting here tonight, is truly a marvel. And we really appreciate them. And the leadership of women of that nature is what is going to get out of this mess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. This is brought to you, by the way, by Telkom, connecting us all tonight. After the break, we talk to a reporter on the ground at the G20, caught up with the Minister of Women in the presidency,
yes.
Minister Chikunga. Chikunga.
Yes.
And to just give her reflections of exactly the same things that Mepumzila was talking about, but also reflect and throw forward to tomorrow's Leaders Summit. So straight after the break, we listen into that conversation. Stay tuned.
Frank Dialogue on your radio with Dr. JJ Tabane. Let's talk frankly.
Emma tota sabela ni. Emma tota sabela ni. Emma tota nanda ni. Ayo lengos, iyo lengos, city lengos. Tandaza nkosi upenduli mitandazo yetu izikhalo uyasiva abafazi bayalila siyathandaza nkosi bedlwengulwa bebulalwa bekhale
evening, caller. You're on Frank Dialogue tonight. Good evening. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Dr. JJ. Good evening to Girl as well. Good evening to Mom. I just have two questions. The first one is, in light of what we saw today with the shutdown, Mampunzile, do you think that South Africa's potential global image matches South African reality? So in other words, is the picture we are painting with the G20 summit the same picture that people on the ground are seeing or experiencing? That's my first question. My second question is, from where you sit, do you think, or how do you think, the policies and the agreements and the MOUs that are going to be signed at the summit are going to...
going to directly impact the people in communities, and these are ordinary South Africans that I'm talking about. Those are my two questions. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Well, unfortunately, we've already said goodbye to the former deputy president. But just to venture an answer to your questions, probably, right, and that's why there was a discussion about civil society. Probably there will be a disconnect between what the leaders are discussing and what somebody in who's listening to us from Alfred Nzo FM is experiencing. That's unfortunately that's what has always happened. So we need to close the gap between what the leaders are discussing and what the people are experiencing. And that's why, for example, Telkom has partnered with us to say, let's look at this issue about digital freedom. Let's look at the issue about digital access. Let's look at the thing about removing digital poverty. Right? So that way, what the B20 was discussing becomes relevant. On Wednesday, when we hear people are asking, oh, tell us about cost of data. Why is it so expensive that we can't even connect and listen to you on YouTube? You know? So you're quite right by asking that question to say, is things that are going to be discussed by these leaders relevant to the ordinary people? And I think that's what how we need to hold our leaders accountable to.
But what I also appreciate about the callers calling in is that our leaders are listening. I mean, the last time we came here, still with Telkom, we had the Minister of Communications and Technology, Solly Malazi, in the midst of, you know, the G20 build-up, still coming onto the show, answering questions. So they are taking these inputs from our communities. And I think that's what I appreciate about this platform, that it's not just about a top-down approach that we see elites discussing, but we're able to see community leaders, members coming in and calling in so that these very thoughts can be considered moving forward with the engagement, which is just what it's all about.
Yeah. And I think that the trick then is not to let it end here. Yeah. The thing is to say, in a few weeks' time, we are able to bring in the people who are part of this G20, to be able to talk to Minister of International Relations, say, yes, you are president of G20 for a year. What does it mean? What has it made a difference in communities? What difference has it made? Yeah. And we get them to be held accountable in the presence of all of these people who are listening in tonight.
Absolutely. Well, we did, of course, earlier on speak about the Minister, Sindisiwe Chikunga, of course, joining us as well, at least on the ground, to just lay out what has been in discussion. So I'm quite keen to hear what she had to say, because it's going to be very interesting to hear how these issues are ventilated. We heard from as far as the C20 is concerned, but we cannot deny that as Minister, so much more, I'm sure, came out from Minister Chikunga.
Okay. It is very important. One, we were given an opportunity as a department to lead the empowerment of women working group, which is a G20 working group led by the Minister of Women and Youth and Persons with Disabilities. So that gave us the opportunity to then identify our priorities. And we identified three of them. The first one is financial inclusion for and of women. The second one is the care economy, paid and unpaid. And the third one is prevention and fighting gender-based violence and femicide. These are the three priorities that we put forward, not only in South Africa, but for all the G20 countries and the invited states. And we had lengthy discussions on these issues. So I can take one by one, for instance. If you look at what we said about gender-based violence and femicide, we recognize that it's not only a South African problem, it's a world problem, as the president even said yesterday. Every country will tell us that per week it's so many women that are being killed, and even the most developed countries, of course, ours is very high. And therefore, we said as a legacy project, we're going to focus as a legacy project, not just the isolating that, but we're going to focus on positive masculinity. And that is why we even had a side project on that one, so that we hear what others are saying. So we're going to focus on that, so that we go to young boys there and talk to them, so that we go to communities down there and say to them, when you do not have water and you are protesting, please don't invite young children, because you never have time to debrief them, to desocialize them. So they are part of that. They listen to strong words.
words and insults, sometimes the touching of buildings, and they learn out of that to say, if you're frustrated, you don't have anything, you touch, you insult, and then they grow up with that. It becomes a way of socializing. So we want to go to communities and raise all these issues in our positive masculinity. Then, of course, on the K economy, we have said many people in South Africa don't even know what we're talking about. But the fact of the matter is that standing here, if you think that I look decent, I don't know whether I do, but there's somebody who made that possible, who washed this dress, ironed it, and she doesn't get any recognition. And usually people who are in the K economy are women. They don't receive any recognition. We receive the recognition. We are saying they must be recognized so that we can also cost the work to say how much are they contributing into the economy by making us look decent. Because when I stand in front of people as the minister, if they think that I look decent, they therefore take me serious. But there's somebody who makes me to look serious, in fact, and make people and people to take me serious. So K-economy can be paying or may not be paying. Possibly who works for me is being paid, but not recognized. There is the other one, there is another girl who drops out of school because the mother is ill, because there's a person with disability who needs to be taken care of. Between the boy and the girl, it will be a girl again. We're not costing that work to say, if we were to pay this girl for the work that she's doing for the sick mother or for the disabled brother, etc., how much will that, and therefore how much is she contributing without being recognized? And that is why our legacy project is to therefore have a strategy on the care economy. And we are happy that we've been invited by the AU to assist in the drafting of the convention on the care economy. So that makes us happy, because that convention will be able to trace it to our work as South Africa. And then, of course, coming to financial inclusion, we are saying women in rural areas must be given land, and they must be supported, so that we believe that land is wealth and inclusion is wealth. So they too have a right to have land and be able to utilize that land, and so that they are able to live, and they need to be supported. But also we work together with quite a number of financial institutions. Those they will include your banking institutions. And we said to them, you are this Bank X, and you have programs for youth, for women, for persons with disabilities, but none of us know. In fact, we don't know as to where those are. We agreed, therefore, that we're going to have a dashboard, a multi-stakeholder dashboard, where we're going to have disaggregated information. Usindi Chikung, Usindi CC company, she's a woman, and she's being supported, she's been trained, and she's been empowered financially, and this is the company she owns, and it is doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, successfully or with challenges, so that we're able, even as a department, to go to that department. But of course, one other thing, Italy came to us to say, we would want to support you with the establishment of the Women Observatory Hub, where you're going to capture and dip whatever information that you have about women, so that if you want to say there are so many women who are in politics in South Africa, you're able to just press the button and it gives you the information, so that we don't continue to talk about women in parliament when we don't know as to how many councillors are women in the whole of South Africa, and where are the challenges, how many women are CAs, for instance, in South Africa, etc., and how are we doing in terms of development, etc., etc. We have judges, how many do we have? So we need that information, and that is what they've said. Yesterday we had this meeting, and it was exciting because we were launching that agreement with them to say now it's going to start.
It was very interesting.
That was very, very, very interesting to me. I think the key thing here is all these theories, right? It looks like we are good at analyzing what the problems are, you know, oppression of women, women being killed, you know, women not being recognized in their professions, etc. But there seems to be a gap in terms of doing something about it.
And I think women want justice. Families want justice. Is our justice system capable of putting the perpetrators to book, investigations? Those perpetrators that still haven't been found are still on the run with allegations still against their name, haven't stood trial. What happens there? because I hear the conversation around positive masculinity going into communities and teaching boys how to be responsible young men. I hear the conversation about financial inclusion and making sure that women in care professions are paid their due. I hear that, but what about justice for those who have fallen? What about preventative measures in making sure that another woman doesn't fall victim? So we still need more.
There's a lot that's needed. Unfortunately, we're a country that that likes events, you know. So 2018, I think it was, there was a national shutdown, big thing, big march to the union buildings and so on, and then followed by a national summit by the president, followed by all sorts of declarations, and followed by a state of a nation address giving R1 billion to gender-based violence programs, etc. And then when COVID came, the first thing to go was that R1 billion. Okay. And then there was still 350 that was given to people, which was multiple billions.
Yeah.
So they didn't say, no, let's keep the billion here to fight gender-based violence while we do other things that relate to COVID, etc.
Sure.
We are a country that seems to be excited about an event. So there's a shutdown today. People lying on the floor for 5 minutes. And then, next year, how many women are going to die at the hands of their partners? Mm. Why? Because when they go to a police station, They are made a joke.
The reality staring at us right in the face. If you turn on your TV, as Dr. Makubele said, all you see is commission after commission. So if we're already seeing a Matlanga commission dissecting the ills in our police system.
Sure. There's no hope then for ordinary people who are going to go to those same police who are corrupt.
Yeah.
Right? Who are going to be paid by the crooks to let them go. And then we're going to be sitting. But anyway, we don't have to be completely morose and negative. Let's just hope that with this, all these leaders gathering here, with the C20 that was happening and so on, there's a reignition, if you like, of action. And thank you very much to me for joining me in this bringing G20 conversations to so many of our communities nationwide, and we hope it will be revived next year. And once again, want to thank Telkom for coming to the party to make these conversations happen. We're wishing all of our leaders, as they are gathering this weekend, good luck in coming up with a declaration that would spur action to make our country, our people's lives better. But until we talk frankly again, may God bless you.
Frank Dialogue on your radio with Dr. JJ Tabane. Let's talk frankly. We'll be right back.